episode is sponsored by The Boardman Review, Cold Shower Media, and West Bay Handmade. This is a curated artisan boutique in downtown Traverse City. They have great gifts and all made by people locally here in Northern Michigan. It's simply lovely if you haven't been there yet.
All handmade.
Yeah.
Hello and welcome to The Improverbial, a podcast where we unearth obscure sayings and phrases from around the world, invent absurd new proverbs, and talk about things mundane, spurious, irrelevant, and profound. I am the Habitalist, Pete Kirkwood.
And I'm Lisa Thalvet, the Tilt Thinker. I've been doing and coaching improv for many years. Pete and I have been doing improv together for some of those years. This podcast is a mashup of Pete's interest in the science of well-being, my background in education and human development, our shared fascination with the world's idiomatic weirdness, and our superpowers in improv comedy. We are the Improverbializers.
Woohoo!
Yeah! This episode is a fun one, and it comes all the way from Iceland.
Oh, man, I thought you were going to say Italia.
Oh, man. No, okay, Iceland. We have not done a proverb from Iceland. All of our listeners out there.
The rich depths of Icelandic proverbs.
Yes, yeah. And those listeners out there are going to appreciate this. Mm-hmm. So this idiom is to play chess with the Pope. To play chess with the Pope. Now, I'm hearing two really distinguished types of activities or ideas out there. Of course, chess, an intellectual game, and the Pope of the highest member of the Catholic Church. Now, this idiom, though, does bring about other types of connotations. What this means is I need to do a number two on a poop. To say it in another way.
I need to take a shit.
Yeah, there you go.
Playing chess with the Pope means taking a shit.
Yeah, that's what it means.
Let's come right out and say it.
So an example would be, hey, Pete, I'll be right back. I need to go play chess with the Pope. And then you'd know I would be gone for a little bit.
Yeah, so this comes from Icelandic.
Yeah, Icelandic, yeah.
And I took a crash course in Icelandic this morning. This is how it would be spoken in a very accurate and correct Icelandic accent. A tepla vit pavan.
Pete, I also wanted to hear how it sounded, so I looked it up.
Oh, and you have some amateur recording? Some amateur recording of it?
Very amateur. It's actually a digital.
Let's hear what it's really like.
Let me hear what they came up with.
A tepla vit pavan.
Pete, you were pretty close.
Exactly.
And you have much more personality with the way you said it. Right. I like how you said that. Any Icelandic listeners, please let us know how we did on that and correct us.
Yeah, send us any other ones too.
Yeah, send us a recording of how it should really be said.
If this is representative of Icelandic proverbs, I love it.
So I think it's interesting, of course, euphemisms to make things that we normally don't talk straightforward about. This is an example of that.
This sounds like one we would make up.
Yeah, it sounds like one that we would. They say euphemisms are used are a way to kind of separate us from the thing, you know, of course, to make it more in polite company. But we have a way, especially with defecation, of like separating ourselves from it. Right. I mean, because
like
it is harmful.
Defecation instead of like pooping.
Exactly. It's harmful for us. So we need to keep physical distance from it. You know,
it's harmful.
It can be harmful.
I love it. I do it daily.
Well, yeah, we do it, but then once it's done, we flush it down the toilet. We
or do
take
we,
it as far away from us as possible.
We take a moment
possible.
To admire it sometimes.
I don't know, Pete. Let's talk about that.
Okay, wait. So first of all, obviously this is not a literal meaning. Although, you know, it's just really so fun for me to imagine someone sitting on the John with a chessboard, like, you know, on their knees and the
you're
Pope
sitting
like opposite.
The thinker position.
Yeah. And Pope sitting opposite them, you know, like,
your next move.
Rook to R7 or whatever they say. I don't know what they say in chess, but, did you get the origin? Like where this came from? It wasn't really a chess game with the Pope.
I could not find the origin on this, where the Icelandic people came up with this.
Someone said, the middle of the 18th century, but that's all literally
that's all
I got
get from it. Yeah. If you know anything more about that, please let us know.
What they said is that Icelanders are typically Lutherans. Did you go to that? And so there's a certain level of, you know, cheeriness about Catholicism there. And, you know, they also, it's just always hilarious. Poop jokes and Pope jokes,
you know. Poop and Pope jokes are hilarious.
Exactly. Why? What is, where did this, how could this have, what do you think is the...
Yeah, I mean, the deepest I could get on it is, yeah, really going for something that's considered undignified to two things that are very dignified, right? So that's a lot of times why euphemisms come from that, right? So like women can say, I'm going to go powder my nose.
Does that mean poop too?
Well, it means I'm going to the bathroom, but it could be I'm going to go snort some cocaine. I mean, it's a
little...
That
would be like almost semi-literally powdering your
exactly.
nose.
Exactly.
But do you think it's like the shape of the... Are the pieces shaped like... The chess pieces, is it like you're like maybe manufacturing the chess pieces? At least the white, the brown, the black ones, possibly.
My mind did not go there that this was like a noodle maker, like it's got a different
soft serve.
Soft serve ice cream. I didn't take that.
And I can imagine you're kind of hunched over in concentration the way you'd be when you were playing chess. Mm-hmm. Possibly.
Truly thinking, yes. I kind of went down the euphemism.
I know you try to keep on going down the euphemism. I still want to talk about like poop jokes.
I mean, I like this idea.
Do you have other euphemisms for this act?
I could come up with my own.
Let's hear them. Cause I looked up a bunch of them.
I did.
Some of my favorites.
Why don't you do it instead of me going off the top of my head, Pete? Tell me what you got.
You'll probably think of some.
Okay. Go for it. Yes.
Some of my favorites, pinching a loaf.
Uh-huh.
Dropping the kids off at the pool.
Oh, I never
an
heard
all-time
that.
Favorite for me. These are some ones I just found. Build a dookie castle, curl some pipe, log an entry, and take the Browns to the Super Bowl.
Take the Browns. Isn't the Cleveland,
for all you sports fans
Cleveland
out there.
Browns yeah. to the Super Bowl?
And then I have to tell you a quick story from personal experience about this. So there was a time when I was living in Vietnam, and I've traveled a lot overseas and a lot of times in developing countries where the sort of sanitation and water quality isn't always necessarily that good. And so the result is that sometimes your bowel movements are unpredictable, shall mm-hmm. we say, meaning sometimes they become very urgent, but then sometimes they become rather infrequent.
Yes.
Sort of on the flip
labored.
Side of that.
Yeah.
And so my friends and I, when you live in a place like that, you find yourself having conversations about your bowel movements with some regularity with people. Which is maybe slightly odd. But my roommates and I, a couple of American guys that I live with, and we started talking about, one of them came in one morning, was like, oh, I was able to achieve a very nice bowel movement today. And the result of that was that we started asking each other whether we'd achieved anything on a given day. And it became then a euphemism for us. And so now to this day, anytime I hear someone talking about their achievement or something they managed to achieve, I instantly think that they took a dump.
Yeah. Aw, so achievement is a euphemism for you.
For me, it is now. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, and for all of us too. Thank you for that gift.
Now you've got that.
And now all of Iceland can enjoy that too.
What an achievement.
What an achievement we just made.
Yeah.
Yeah. These really nice ways of saying these things.
Yeah.
You ask if I have some other ways. So I lived in Belgium for a while. Mm-hmm. So I have some familiarity with French and, if you go in the bathroom, you would say, je vais petit coin. Like I'm going to the little corner and that's the bathroom.
Kind of gross.
It's not gross.
Oh,
at
no,
all.
Okay. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And also un grand package means a big package. Yeah. That's the number two. And petit
number
package
two.
Is the number one.
Really? Yeah. Cause yeah. we a big package in this country is a whole different meaning.
Yes, if you've got a big package. Yeah, yeah. It's a poop in French.
Yeah.
I looked at how in advertising, like if you're in advertising and you need to talk about poop or constipation or any of that, they have to use lots of euphemisms.
Absolutely.
Now, with that said, I think those walls are really being broken down
Absolutely.
Now, especially like with menstruation and such, like they're really saying period.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before it was really talked around.
Yep.
And they're saying a lot more, but, you know, there were different ways of saying, there's two reasons why advertisers use euphemisms. First is to be more polite and it's more approachable. Also, censorship, like they can't say shit and crap and all that. So you need to use different ways.
Shart and.
You can use shart instead. Yes.
Well, shart is something else completely actually.
So.
Why is it always so funny?
Why is it?
Because it's always so funny when you talk about poop and farts. And, yeah. I mean, like, people have been laughing about their bodily movements, bodily functions forever. In Pompeii, the ruins of Pompeii, 79 AD, there's a graffito on the wall that says Apollinaris, doctor to the Emperor Titus, defecated well here.
And was it considered funny back then?
I guess so.
I think so.
Or else is that some sort of like landmark saying this is a great place? Like right. You had a nice one here. You probably would have achieved something nice here too.
You achieved something nice here. In advertising, here's one. This is a quote. It's been gently softening up hard cases for over 60 years. It's been gently softening up hard cases for over 60 years. That is a product that's helping with constipation. Uh-huh. Obviously,
like an X-Lax product.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
you're hearing all these toilet paper ads now. They're just going right out and talking like about what? Wiping like, your butt. I can't, I don't have,
like
I
wiping didn't, your butt.
Yeah. Like really just, you know, saying we'll really get in there and clean it up for you. Like nobody's, and they put in like soul music and like, there's like whole songs about it. I don't have it at the top of my head, but yeah, it's like a thing now.
Yeah. So Pete, I was wondering if you want to play a little game and the folks at home can play it at home too.
Of course I do.
Now these aren't necessarily poop related. These are other industries, but they're euphemisms in advertising.
Oh, this will be fun.
So, and these, you're going to get most of these, but I try to put in a couple in there. So first of all, if it's said that a product has been pre-owned, for example, a car, what does that mean?
That's used.
It's a used car. That's right. Yeah, so used is kind of out, pre-owned. Genuine imitation leather means
fake leather,
which is like vinyl. Mm-hmm. It's vinyl. Yeah.
Yeah. Genuine fake leather.
Adult beverage is.
That's an alcoholic beverage.
That's right.
Soft drink, non-alcoholic beverage.
That's right. It's soft. All right. So now we're talking real estate. If a property has easy access.
Oh, that means it's like on a busy road.
It's on a highway. Yeah.
Oh, how about your Airbnb is, cozy.
It's really small.
Cramped, yeah.
It's really small. All right. Now, Pete, this is where I might stump you. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Okay. So this has to do with women's underwear.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Subject that I'm a specialist
yes,
in.
Yes, you are. So if the women's underwear says, it says there's a no-show look.
It means it's like opaque. Is that right? Is it a bra?
Nope.
No-show look.
Bottom half.
Oh, it's a thong.
I'm not.
You can't see the panty line. No VPL.
No visible panty line.
I said VPL, so I'm very knowledgeable.
Yes, you are. That was good. That was industry term. Mm-hmm. What about if his underwear is breathable? What does that mean?
Maybe it's in a gaseous form. You can actually breathe it.
You can use it as a breathing device if you're in a tear gas in a protest rally. No, Pete.
Breathable.
Breathable. Breathable means it's the fabric is so that.
I know what breathable means.
You do.
Like you won't sweat or something, right?
It'll be kind of like that. And they're really kind of like, they're not for sexy, like attracting anybody. They're just kind of breathable. It's just kind of really functional.
You wear
functional.
When you're like pretty sure you're not
going to be hooking up anytime soon.
Yep, yep.
Now, what about... this one I just saw at Target the other day. This is for, these are called no muffin top underwear.
They don't squeeze you too hard around the waist.
That's it. They squeeze you at the very right place.
Right. They taper off toward the top so you don't have a muffin top.
There's no type of muffin top coming over the top. So
can we talk about camel toe?
If you want to talk about camel toe, you
I'm
can,
just
Pete.
Talking about euphemisms.
I don't know if that's
I'm sorry if I went there.
Way to say that.
It's when like the underwear is like really tight in the front for ladies.
The seam is going. Yeah, the seam
right
is
up
not
in there.
Yeah, right up in there. Like, is that a euphemism, Pete?
Well, what would you call it otherwise? It's not a toe of a camel.
You know what? Though this is what
that's
I think about
that's
this.
That's exactly a euphemism.
Yeah, but like.
It's also
I never noticed that as a feature. And then it's like,
not a feature.
It's not, I never noticed that. And then I heard camel toe. I was like, oh, that's now my eye is drawn to that as if like, that's something that exists. Isn't a euphemism something that already exists? Then you put a polite term on it. This is taking something that like really doesn't exist.
It totally existed. We just didn't have a word for it.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right,
for
all
sure.
Right.
Okay. So, we're laughing a lot about euphemisms and about bodily functions and about bodily shapes and stuff. And that, you know, gets me to thinking about like laughter and the human need for that and how that, how, you know, did this take you anywhere to any big thoughts? Other, I mean, you've already had some great thoughts. I'm loving this game we're playing. Is there more?
No, Pete. No, thank you. Thanks for playing the game and everybody at home for playing the game.
Yeah,
I see where you're going with this. Of course. Right. Euphemisms are not just to talk about things more politely, but they just allow us to like take a different perspective of something that might not be pleasant. Right.
Yeah. Or it's like makes something funny that's otherwise awkward.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, absolutely. Turning things that are awkward to humor and that.
Yeah. And like, what's great about laughing? You're an expert in laughing. You make everybody laugh all the time. So like,
shucks,
we all
Pete,
know.
Thanks.
Yeah. It's like physiologically, it's very good for you to laugh. Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. The hormones that get kicked off in our bodies. We need
oxytocin.
It. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's the love hormone. Also kicked off by making love. And just
laughing
feelings
and
of closeness
love,
and stuff
yeah.
like that. It stimulates lots of organs. Laughter does. It activates and relieves your stress response. It soothes tension, stimulates circulation, all that stuff. That's like just short-term benefits, according to the Mayo Clinic. I did a little research here.
I can tell, Pete. Yeah.
And the long-term stuff, like immune system health, it's demonstrably helps your immune system. It relieves pain. It increases personal satisfaction, strengthens interpersonal connections, improves mood. So many things.
Yeah, it's so important for us. You know, this idea of bringing levity to situations. And even, you know, you and I are working in businesses where you have some hard conversations.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just have a feeling of levity around it, I mean, that can go a long way. It can get people through a lot.
You know, if we couldn't laugh, I mean, if we couldn't make light of things and joke around, I just don't know how we'd be able to do most of the difficult things we have to get through. I mean, the hardest hardships that you can endure, none of them prevent you from sort of lightening the mood with a little wisecrack, you know. In some ways, like you think about the people that you'd like to have with you in the, you know, if you're on the Shackleton expedition, you want somebody who's got a sense of humor. You know?
Yeah. It puts things in perspective.
Absolutely.
Here we are, Pete, once again, standing in front of our beautiful Proverbitron.
Look how it sparkles.
I know. I love how it sparkles and glimmers, and it gives us just a little bit of a wink. Have you seen that new feature? It can give some human expressions.
It's really nice. It's the Anthropomorphitron.
Yes, it is. And we're so grateful to the Boardman Review for sponsoring this beautiful piece of technology, which spits out two words from our listeners that give us at random. And we take those two words. And Pete, I want to emphasize this. This is totally made up this second half.
Yeah, chill out, people. It's fake.
It's not real. Everything we say is completely made up. Pete and I just looking at each other like, right, we're right. Yeah, you're going to say something next. And it's such a fun part of our show. We love doing it. So Pete, let's go ahead and push a button here. Pete, why don't you reach up way up there and tickle that button.
Sack race.
All right, Pete, do you mind if I get on your back here? I wanted to push that.
Oh, yeah, here you go. Get up. Gotcha. Wait, okay. Ow, wait. On my. Okay, got it? Okay.
Hey, poke.
Robot.
Oh, Pete, come on. Set me down a little more gently next time.
Oh, gosh.
Robot. Pete, this proverb is such a peculiar one, and you know I love these peculiar ones. It is, when eating a robot, leave the sack race early. When eating a robot, leave the sack race early. Now, Pete, a lot of people think, you know, when eating, like, when do you eat a robot, right?
Yeah, that's their first mistake.
I know, that's their very first mistake, because a robot is something way back when was a term for something else.
Yeah, it was like, you know, when they would build, well, you know, what's funny about this story is that, like, people think that what we're talking about is a robot of the kind, like, they would make, what do they call this, automatons? Back in the 1800s, it was a craze to build these, like, clockwork machines that did, sometimes they're humanoid and they did cool tasks. They would, like, wind them up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that kind of robot.
No, it's not that kind of robot. Yeah, because so a robot was, I mean, from the very... you bring it down. Robot is doing a function for you. So it's normally done by a human and it's a function done by something else. Mm-hmm. So in this case, it was field mice. So field mice were trained way, 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 way long ago for helping humans in many things around
people
the house.
Don't realize that the reason they call field mice is because they were used to help to work in the fields.
In the fields. Mm-hmm. Before oxen, before yaks. And
the very poorest peasants, they would just tie a thread to the tail of a field mouse to pull their plow.
Yep. And so that was the very scaled down version of a robot. So these field mice, you'd have your children helping you plow these fields, right? Mm-hmm. And the children got smart because they would be playing with the field mice and like, I'm not going to do this. Mom and pop are away. I'm going to have the field mice do this.
And the children were the first robots, actually.
Yeah, children are the first.
And then they used the most field original. Mice as a robot later.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you got the field mice plowing away. Mm-hmm. And it was an invention of children. Mom and pop and adults started to see the effectiveness. Now let's be clear here. They were only getting a few square inches a day
of plowing.
Done.
Yeah. I mean, I think the equation was something like, two field mice per square foot.
Right.
So like these peasants would have,
an army
55 by 50 plot of vegetables. They'd have like so many field mice
to pull that plow. Yeah. And some people ask, how do you train a field mouse? How does that actually work?
Yeah, well, they would have the children, their children would call to the field mice.
And they had a special call. Mm-hmm. Now, there was no recordings of these calls, but some anthropologists know they were able to, by some of the writings and some of the experiments of field mice.
In the way that the calls kind of endured over time to other animals, they kind of evolved over time. So they kind of backtracked from those, right?
Yeah, so there's a little bit of a... Now, I don't want to do, and then the shh at the end. Yeah. And we broke it up like that because if I had done the full thing, we probably would have gotten some field mice in here.
And because the field mice, like over so many generations of breeding and evolving, that they like start to, they started to respond even like, it's like passed down from generation to generation, field mice.
And then that gets into it later in our story, you never, ever, I mean, just besides not having a field mouse in your house, it's deadly.
Well, it's funny because they became, the fact that it's dangerous to like, have too many field mice around. It's funny because it did become a delicacy for a period of time, and among a certain part of the population, there would be like at carnivals and stuff, that it became a popular snack.
Oh, field mice.
Yeah.
My gosh.
That's where the term robot came back into use.
Right.
Because they would say, how many field mice do you want? And you'd be like, I want a robot.
I want a robot of field mice.
It became a thing of 22 field mice was a robot.
22, because that's what an acre.
A minimum of 22 to apply your 50.
An acre of land. 22 field mice over a year. It would take them a year to plow that acre. To plow it.
Yeah. But so like at carnivals and festivals and stuff, they would have, you'd order a robot of field mice.
Yeah. A robot of field mice. They're delicious. They would serve with powdered sugar, a little bit crispy. They were a little bit crispy. And what was the spice they'd use in there? It was a little bit.
I think paprika. Or cumin or something. But what's cool was when they froze up. So when they fried them, really deep fried them, the tails would get like stiff.
Yeah.
So kids would walk around and it was great. They could just eat it like almost like a turkey leg or a lollipop.
It is adorable.
It's really cute. But, and actually we just had here in Traverse City, we just had the Cherry Festival.
Yeah,
I was reminiscing about the things that I'd read about the old times when they used to have.
Yeah. They still got the elephant ears, which is a whole nother podcast.
Whole other story about
right.
Where,
but the robot of field mice, you don't see it much more,
but also at these carnivals and stuff, you don't see as many sack races as you used to. There used to be all kinds of feats of strength. People come together and do that sort of
the three-legged race. You're right.
And the pumpkin shuffle,
the pumpkin toss,
yep,
the pumpkin mask contest,
and the wolf run.
Oh man, the wolf run.
Yeah,
yeah.
that one went out of fashion pretty early though, because wolves are fast.
Yeah, yeah.
And farmers are not that fast.
Not as fast, especially when they've got the pumpkin mask on.
Right. Then because that's part of the tradition, you'd have to wear the pumpkin.
Always wear the
because people mask. Thought that it would protect them.
They wore it as a helmet.
It was not.
And yet
helpful.
In the end,
it would slow them down.
It slowed them down and you never won. Mm-mm. So,
back to the sack race.
Yeah, so then the sack race was very, now you, a lot of times today, the actual sack, you think of a potato sack. But back then.
Potato sacks were expensive.
They were expensive. You couldn't use a potato sack back then. So
you had to borrow like a shirt from your neighbor or like one of your garments. And so people had to be very careful with their, when they're jumping.
And they only had one garment.
Right, like, yeah.
So what you did is you took off your shirt, you tied the arms,
climbed inside,
you put your legs in the arms. Mm-hmm. And then you also would get a buddy in there because they kind of combine it with a three-legged race.
Oh, it's a three-legged sack race. There were a lot of different heats in the sack races. Mm-hmm. There wasn't that much going on back in the day. So they had a lot of different types of sack races at the carnival. There wasn't like a Ferris wheel. The whole carnival was basically sack races.
Sack races, yeah.
But what they did have was a lot of really yummy food. And like we were alluding to earlier, sometimes those field mice, it could be dangerous if they weren't cooked properly if they weren't fresh.
Sometimes they were still alive. I mean, you remember that one story where I'll get a robot, a field mice, start eating away. And it was a child in this case was just ravaged by these live field mice.
Yeah. She was holding like the better part of a robot, a field mice in her hand. And like a couple of them just started freaking out
and just nibbled her face off.
And that's one of the famous stories about sack races in sack race lore.
Cause they were this person was fueling up for a sack race.
Yeah.
Got that robot of field mice. And
you remember, so if you've eaten a whole robot of field mice, right, chances are you're going to get a bad one in there.
You'd get one every once in a while.
You're standing in the only shirt you own.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And hence this proverb.
You're vulnerable because you don't have much clothes on.
That's right.
You have a little nibble from a field mouse that had not been properly fried. You're a little
worried there might be, you know, there might be some intestinal issues with those robot that you just ate.
Yeah. And so then if this came about, so when eating a robot, leave the sack race early.
It's good advice.
It is good advice. Stick with the elephant ears. We'd like to thank our sponsors of this episode, The Boardman Review, Cold Shower Media, and West Bay Handmade.
Yeah.